Hey, it's Richie, and before we begin today's show, you've been hearing us talking about DraftKings for well over a month now. They are, of course, a leader in daily fantasy sports, and now a huge payday can come every day by entering their contests with huge cash prizes up for grabs. However, you gotta be outside of the state of Arizona. Daily fantasy is not legal here in Arizona quite yet, but if you are listening to us elsewhere in the United States of America or Canada, you probably know how to play by now. You can download the DraftKings app and sign up using the promo code THPN. New users will get a free entry with their first deposit. That's code THPN to get a free entry with your first deposit only at DraftKings, DraftKings.com. $7 billion have been paid out by DraftKings over all sports over the last couple years, and I know you want a piece. DraftKings.com.
I'm Corey Crenshaw.
I'm Richie Suave Flores.
And this is Sporty with Corey and Richie Suave
on the Hockey Podcast Network.
Welcome back in Sporty Nation. It has been an insane couple of days. Richie and I are recording this on, Wednesday night? I'm losing my days. We're still pretty hyped because the game ended maybe like 10 minutes ago, 20 minutes ago, something in there. I don't know. I can't even think straight at this point. That third period was definitely something else. I don't even know. I wish I could say that this was some really fun hockey to watch, but it was actually really stressful. So to get into all of this and get into basically the last two games straight off the bat, as always, my wonderful and amazing co-host, Richie Suave Flores, how you doing?
Hello, Corey. Yeah, like you said, the game ended about half an hour ago. Both of us are still buzzing here. I was drinking a cold brew from Dutch Bros the entire game long. Still have a little bit of it left, but I don't think it's the cold brew that's keeping me alive right now. I think it's the fact that the Coyotes have come back from three goals down in two straight games to get 4 points out of four against the Anaheim Ducks. And there's so much to talk about here over the last two games. I don't even know quite where to start with it. I'm just happy that they got the 4 points and they're still now back into a playoff spot as where we are recording with 21 points, which ties them with the LA Kings. And they're only a point back of the St. Louis Blues now with a game in hand, which is very impressive. The race in the West Division, very, very tight this year. Where do you want to start? Because there's so much to talk about. We can go for 3 hours. Corey and I usually start the show by bullshitting for 25 minutes. And then we usually end the show with some random shit. I don't think we're going to have time for any of that because we can just talk about the last two games of hockey for 3 hours, actually, if we really wanted to.
I mean, I think we should start with Aiden fucking Hill. Like, this was what a way to come in as being, you know, the number three goaltender, which is an interesting conversation in itself, considering the fact that with how hurt Antti Raanta is all the time, he has deemed himself to be practically worthless. And I know that's a strong statement to make, but he has. He's basically deemed himself to be basically worthless because of the fact that he's injured all the time. Darcy Kuemper is getting tired, and we were all very worried that he had gotten injured. He's apparently okay. But I'm just glad that Aiden Hill came in, made that amazing save in overtime, and was able to pull it out for them in the shootout. So props to him for coming in, at down 3-0 and really helping give the energy throughout the rest of this game. Because I don't know, I just feel like I think Darcy Kuemper's tired. And I think he's frustrated, as we saw in the first game against the Ducks when he tried to get some either get some frustrations out or get some energy flowing. But like, no matter what, is burnt out. And so it's nice to see someone come in and actually fucking pull it out for this team because Antti Raanta is nowhere to be found.
He was, Aiden Hill, speaking of Aiden Hill, he was 14 of 14 in net between the time. He made the big save in overtime, like he said, going post to post on what was looking like it was going to be the game winner. Maybe the save of the season for the Arizona Coyotes, in my opinion. And like you said, Rick Tocchet had said after the game that he doesn't appear to be injured. He just took him out to try and give the team a boost, to try and basically tell his team, like, hey, get your shit together, all right? You got to play better for your goaltender. And they did just that, scoring three goals in a row to tie the game and, of course, winning in the shootout. And then Aiden Hill coming up big in the shootout, too, with a couple big saves there. I was worried there for a second after the goal from Zegras. I was like, oh, no, are we gonna see another blown shootout lead like the Coyotes did against the LA Kings when Darcy Kemper gave up three straight shootout goals? But, no, like, I cannot believe what Aiden Hill did. Like, this team came back from three goals down, yes. But in my opinion, Aiden Hill could very well be the first star of the game because he hasn't played all season. In fact, if you give me a second, Corey, I want to find out that Hill saw action in a National Hockey League game because it's been completely cold like that and made some really nice saves. You could argue some of the best goaltending we've seen from the Coyotes all season long, you know? Like, man, that's so good to see. And it's performances like that can give a team a little bit of, you know, excitement and a boost. And Phil Kessel, go ahead.
It got you so excited that you started chirping people on Twitter for just posting the Zegras, because obviously it was his first show, for just posting that and not posting all of the and not posting the other two absolutely dirty goals from Dvorak and Garland. It got you that hyped. It's a lot of fun to watch when Rishi gets so hyped. He starts chirping people online.
And it wasn't just anybody I was chirping. It was John Buchagross I was chirping. And he came back at me and couldn't even form a complete sentence, which was really funny. But yeah, because Trevor Zegras was getting all the he was getting his goal shared around everywhere. I'm like, dude, didn't fucking matter, right? Go watch Connor Garland and Christian Dvorak's goals. Those were just as dirty. To answer my own question, Aiden Hill has not been in a National Hockey League game in over a year on the calendar. February 19th of 2020 was the last time Aiden Hill saw NHL action. And he comes and he does and pitches a 14 for 14 shutout. So that's how you win hockey games, though, right? It starts with your defense and goaltending. And for a team that for a couple periods there, the first period back on Monday and then the second period here on Wednesday night, they completely failed in that respect, right? In the second period, I believe the Coyotes went something like 11 minutes without getting a shot on goal. So somehow, some way, this team found two ways to win in back-to-back games. And like you said, Aiden Hill was a big part of that. And now I'm curious, what do you do now? When you're going to take on the Colorado Avalanche up on Friday and Saturday. Colorado, one of the best teams in the league this year, of course. What do you do? Darcy Kemper appears to be healthy, but you need to give him, my opinion, like we were just talking about there. So do you stick with Aiden Hill on Friday, or do you go back to Kemper? Or, hell, if Ronta's back healthy, do you go to him? I think Rick Tocchet has a fascinating dilemma on his hands here.
Yeah, I think he was very impressed by Hill tonight, just as we were. He had said able to come in there and stay mentally strong and do what he needed to do tonight is a testament to Hilly. I've got to give it to that kid a lot of credit tonight. He was really impressed by him, but again, we only saw him in one period of action, and it was up against the Ducks, which is a much different team than Colorado. So how do you feel comfortable with that? I mean, they've been able to see him in a lot of practices and with that taxi squad and everything. So they've really been able to see him that way. It depends on how they feel he is prepared prepared. You know, we only got a small sample size. As great as it was still a smaller sample size. I do think it opportunity. I don't know if it necessarily earned him an opportunity, but you are absolutely correct considering the fact that Darcy Kuemper needs a break. He is near his breaking point, and we've slowly been seeing it recently. And so you may be taking a high risk by putting him in one of the games against Colorado, but you might have to. It might just possibly be that they play Kuemper in the first game, see how the team plays. That's the other thing as well. It's so dependent. This team teams that are better than them and down to teams that are worse than them. So they might actually be playing more defense in front of Darcy than they have been recently and playing a little bit cleaner of hockey. So it's so highly dependent, and they're going to have to go based off of how they feel and how they determine that both of them are looking. And that's so high on this end of it. But I could see him getting one game depending upon whether they want to either give Darcy a break or two, they play the first game and it's just not going well, and they want to change things up with Aiden again. So I think there is a possibility that we'll be seeing him. For the Raanta part, who fucking knows? I swear to God, I have no idea how he even gets hurt half the time. Like, is this, and it's not like it's always the same thing either. Like, we would have to think it's some type of lingering injury, but it always seems to be different. I don't know. That is one of the greatest mysteries. Someone must have a, what are those called? Are they voodoo dolls stab them? I feel like someone is stabbing a voodoo doll of Auntie Raanta and just breaking the man's bone. How he always hurts himself. But I don't think as a team they can really count on him anymore. You have to start making plans without him, honestly.
I think so too. I mean, I think we're seeing the end of Auntie Raanta's tenure here in Arizona, but we can leave that discussion for later on in the season. And I think it's almost a 100% likelihood this weekend that we're going to see both goaltenders this weekend. We're going to see two different ones, right? Because it's a back-to-back on Friday and Saturday against Colorado. And so it's up to Rick Tocchet to decide what he's going to do. And I have a feeling that it's likely going to – I think at least we're going to get one game from Darcy and one game from Aiden Hill. Because Aiden Hill earned a chance to play this weekend. Okay? He earned, based on what he did against Anaheim, he earned a shot to get a full game, in my opinion, by what he did tonight and based on what Rick Tocchet said and based on what Phil Kessel was saying about him. But here's my next question here is based on how they played against Anaheim, they have no chance against Colorado. Like, there's just no way. You can't do what they did against Anaheim in those two games and basically, more or less, they got lucky that they beat Anaheim. The fact that they gave up 6 goals in 2 games to that fucking team should be a debacle. Damn, Ducks are the worst offense in the National Hockey League, and you give up 6 goals to them across 2 games? That is a mess defensively and in goal for this team. And
oh yeah,
which means they have to play perfect hockey against Colorado, basically. And I just don't see that happening, especially after that playoff series when the Coyotes were completely mismatched. So the Coyotes are going to be in one here on Friday and Saturday against the Avalanche, that's for sure.
It's so highly dependent on which Coyotes you see. If you are going to get the Coyotes that play against the Blues, who play a lot more consistent hockey, or if you're going to see the Coyotes against, you know, Kings and Ducks, which are a mess, a giant shit show most of the time. I mean, given they're in both of these games, there were only 2 periods. It was the first period in the first game and the second period in the second game. Oh, that's kind of funny how that worked. But that were just absolute garbage. But still, like, we've you have to play a consistent 6 when you play Colorado, it comes down to tiny mistakes, small, minuscule mistakes on the ice that are going to cost you, and they will cost you dearly because they will be a lot tighter and a lot heavier of games. And you can't have a plan of making dumb decisions, bad defensive plays, and not having any offense and think you're going to win a hockey game. It just doesn't work that way. You can start a period like this second game where you're doing well, but you're not scoring offensively, and then have a trash second period and then be able to turn it on in the third and just be able to pull it out because of the fact that you're playing the Ducks. That is literally the only reason why. And so it's not going to happen. It's funny because, you know, it's very exciting. It's very like nerve-wracking to watch and stuff like that. And you're really hyped about it in the end, but in a way it's kind of like an Instagram filter. It's kind of glazing over the shit that's underneath because of the fact that if you really think about this, congrats, you got the 4 points out of this, but you should have been able to get them much easier and not given up any points during that process. It's really shitty to see this team not perform well, but I'm sadly not surprised.
Yeah, neither am I. I think a lot of the things we saw in this really against LA and Anaheim in the last four games total is a team that is basically playing like we thought they would play, right? Granted, they won the last two games 4-3, but they had a lot of luck go their way in the third period of both of those games. And they create a lot of that luck because of their, you know, their ability to put the Ducks back on their heels in the third period of those games and have them make mistakes. And the perfect example of that was the Phil Kessel goal to tie the game where, you know, they were able to pressure the Ducks in their defensive zone and they made a mistake and Phil Kessel was left wide open back door for a tap-in goal. But for the most part, this team has struggled to score and they've struggled to do it consistently from a lot of their bottom nine. And I've talked about that on the show and on Twitter. And, you know, Coach Talkie reiterated that after the game, because for the first 40 minutes, you know, 45 minutes of the game on Wednesday, right, then they were scoreless again. And that's my biggest question about this team is like, yeah, cool. You got, you know, three goals against Anaheim and then the shootout. And then you had four goals in the Monday game. But they need to do it more consistently, right? And luckily tonight, you know, they were able to get some Connor Garland to contribute, right? And Christian Dvorak to contribute. But they need more consistency. And I'm curious to see now if they can do that against tougher competition. They proved they can do it against the Blues. But how wild would it be if this team got back on track and they started to play with more consistency against these better teams, against your Colorados and your Minnesotas that are coming up on the schedule? That's par for the course for this team, right? Where against Vegas, they hung in there. They played okay. They didn't play awful for most of that four-game set, right? Against St. Louis, for the most part, they were the better team in that series. So I'm hoping there's a little bit of that like at play here where the Coyotes just somehow find a way to find a switch. It's like, oh, we got to play good against this good hockey team. And it wouldn't shock me at all if this team like showed up against Colorado and put their foot on the gas and was able to sneak out, you know, two or three points against the Avalanche, which would be kind of wild coming off of what happened in the playoffs, obviously.
Yeah, because this team doesn't fully really make sense. Every single time they go into a situation, you think, you know, a really tough battle for them, and there's a possibility they're going to get slaughtered, they actually somehow turn into a different team. They start to turn the gears. It's like they don't perform until they are in these, like, unbelievable situations that you never think they're going to get out of. You know, it's like in this one, you're like, okay, they pulled this out on Monday. How are they going to do this again? There's no way they're going to do this again. And then they end up doing it. And it's crazy, but it's the way that this team is built. I don't know. It's just the way that they always, over the past like two seasons now, the way that they've operated has always been very scratching and clawing-esque. They like to come from behind that way and just pull themselves back up. It's interesting that you pointed out the fact about how they need more consistency from their scoring. Even Talkett had mentioned tonight that, you know, they're getting great production out of that short leash line, and they're getting great production out of certain players, but there are many, many more that need to be producing just as consistently. That's where you end up having lulls, is you can't be relying all completely on one line to score for you. And so you really have to have all of these, the bottom lines producing just as often, because that's what this team needs. And two, to your fact of when you're saying like, wouldn't it be cool if they were better and play more consistently during the third period? What if this is what the Coyotes always played like it would be? And then I did a gif of magic, because it absolutely would be completely magic to see. That is the when this team is firing on all cylinders, is when they are in desperation mode. And it's really unfortunate that that's the only time you get to see the best they have, is when they are situations when being desperate is their only option. That's when they finally turn it on and become the team that we know they can be, and the team that Richie and I have been arguing to people that they can be, because you know, within the network, a lot of people like to count the Coyotes down and out. It's funny, Richie, you had tweeted from our account about on the Monday game about the Ducks players who were in the box laughing after the fight. Also, there was so many fights. We could do an entire podcast on all the fights over the past two games. Sorry, choked. But you had tweeted out about that. And it started like blowing up of all these people that were like tweeting about it. It's to you, if there is a chance to shit on the Coyotes, people will jump on that bandwagon. And it's so hard for us to sometimes like stay positive and really just tell everyone, this team has this possibility. They have it to you. It's so hard that we get to see small glimpses of it, but never a full picture.
Yeah, I agree. And that's the frustrating part of it. But the good thing about that, though, is they haven't necessarily ruined their season yet. They're still, like I said, the West Division is so close right now that they're still in it. So there's still a lot of time left in the season. About, gosh, really, what are we, 20 games into the season, right? So there's still time. So there's still time for this team to really get on a roll and roll through a 4 or 5 game win streak. And the way the Western Division is stacking up right now, if you can go on a 4 or 5 game win streak, when all the games are interdivision like they are, or intradivision like they are, that's going to go a long way. So the fact that they're just still kind of hanging around, they're just below, you know, in a minus goal differential, they can easily pick that back up if they have a couple good games in a row. They're well over a 500 points percentage. Like, they're hanging around, and that's a good thing. And at the end of the day, like, my big takeaway from this entire Anaheim series is, yeah, they didn't play all that great, but they got to move on, right? They got the 4 points, and that's what matters at the end of the day, is the points and your wins. And I'm just glad that they managed to figure out a way to get all 4 points against Anaheim, because the way they played against LA, like, it wasn't looking very good. So after these last two games, I'm still fairly positive about this team. Will that change come this weekend? It probably will. Honestly, I feel like we're watching a helter-skelter type of roster at this point, but it was exciting to watch, and that's a good thing.
Yeah, I would like to say that being an Arizona sports fan is never easy. They never make it easy on us because every single team, you see them on the cusp of greatness every single time, but they have to blow it before they do well. And I know what it is about this state, but every team loves to do that to us. So if you've ever wondered if you're a strong person, you are strong just by being an Arizona sports fan.
Yeah, and you know, I was watching the Suns game on Wednesday night too, and they lost. They blew a 13-point lead early in the game. I would say the same thing about the Suns. Like, the Suns are feel like everything is going right for the Suns right now. They're 20-11. They're playing really well. They're one of the five best teams in the NBA right now, I'd say. But I feel like the sky is going to come crashing down at some point. That's really mean of me to say, but like, we're so freaking cynical anymore in this town, aren't we?
If there is one thing, though, that is no debate, whether people want to act like there is or not, is the fact that they have both the Coyotes and the Suns have like the coolest jerseys in the league.
I agree. And yeah, you're referring to the Coyotes reverse retro purple jerseys, right? And then the Suns city edition jerseys, as they're officially called, but they're the black jerseys with the really cool like sun kind of thing that says the valley on it. I agree.
Yes.
Those are dope.
Yeah. So, I mean, if there is any bright side, they look good even if they're losing.
I agree. I think a lot of the rest of the leagues are jealous of those two jerseys. Unfortunately, the Coyotes are 0-2. They lost both.
I was really hoping they would have the same Kachina vibes. I was hoping it would bring the Kachina vibes over.
Yeah, but so far, not quite. But who knows? Maybe that will change on Saturday against the Avalanche when they wear those jerseys again and hopefully can avoid going 0-3. In them, which would be nice, because at some point, like, it becomes one of those things where, like, these look cool, but I don't want to wear them anymore because it ain't working out.
Yeah, I mean, luckily they wear them every Saturday game in February and March, so it's not an insane amount of games. So if anything goes south in that end, it's not the dominant jersey. So And they're wearing the Kachinas quite a bit, so that's the bright side of that. I mean, they still, again, like, even if you're losing, you still look good losing. I just feel like they should be embracing it a little bit more. You know, the good play good type feels a little bit more. But who knows with this team? Like I said, you can go into a situation thinking, oh, they're going to just be absolute ass, or this team is going to be average, this team is going to be great, and they will do the complete opposite. It's honestly like a rebellious teenager, and we are all the parents just hoping that they don't kill themselves. Like, that's basically where we're at this point.
I guess that's one way to put it. But I don't know if we have much else to say about the last four games. There's a lot going on, obviously. But we'd be remiss if we didn't mention how great Phil Kessel's been playing lately. He had two more points again on Wednesday. I think he's got, 6 points, a couple multi-point games. I'm bringing up his stats right now here. He's got 14 points in 19 games this year. He's been a little streaky at times, but to see Phil Kessel starting to get his hot streak rolling again is a big deal for this team, because he's such a big piece of this roster. I hope we can keep it going, though, because, like, he went 10 games without a goal. He now has 3 goals in his last 4 games. Very, very important for Phil Kessel to see him back basically to kind of full strength now, as and he's expected to.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Phil Kessel is... this team needs production out of, and very consistently. When he went on that dry spell, it was very evident. And this has been a long time with that spell of games in there where he wasn't getting any points. So he's a vet. He knows how to be in the right place at the right time, and he just needs to consistently be doing that, because like tonight, when he is in the right place at the right time, he's scoring goals. So it's, some of it's not even necessarily a talent, of although he's been moving it around in the offensive zone pretty well as of recent. It's literally just if he just uses his skills with his knowledge of the game and ability to hit correctly, it really glad that he's doing well. And I kind of briefly mentioned it earlier, but I guess we do have to give a shout out to the fact that the first time we played the Ducks were the ones having a goaltender throw some punches out, and this time around it was us with Darcy Kuemper throwing some punches out. So I think we are starting a goaltender fight club. Is that what's going on here?
That's right. Yeah. That's really funny. I almost forgot about that. John Gibson getting into it with Connor Garland earlier this season.
He jumped on him. Which also, too, by the way, if I want to like nitpick on some, I won't go into a lot of deep things about certain choices, I guess you can say, that the officiating was making, you know, like when someone's bleeding from the eye and not making that four, but I digress. It was very interesting as well, though, that like Gibson full-blown like skated out of his crease and jumped on Connor Garland and nothing happened, but there were like a gaggle of penalties on Darcy Kuemper for his.
Sounds about right. I usually don't harp on officiating too much, but especially when it comes to Connor Garland, I feel like things are a little one-sided this season, because he gets pushed around very often, and very often there aren't really a lot of penalties. I think there was a case on during the Wednesday game here where there was some scrummage going on in front of the net, right? I think Oliver Ekman-Larsson and Max Jones got into it, and mm-hmm. they ended up calling the 4-on-4, but it's like, you know, the Ducks were the aggressors here, not Oliver Ekman-Larsson, because we know OEL's not the most, I wouldn't say aggressive, but he's not the first Coyote, I would say, to, like, toss the
gloves. I was wondering
where
you're going to go with this. I was really wondering how you're going to say that.
Yeah, he's not the first guy to drop the gloves, right? You, that's Lawson Crouse, your Tyler Pitlicks, your Drake Kajulas.
He's known to be a softer player. I mean, and not as much now, but the history of him, he was very much known as being a soft player throughout the league. I don't know what their opinion of him is now, but that definitely his reputation.
Right. All right. Well, I think it's going to do it for our hockey talk here. I want to wrap up the show, Corey, in the next 5 minutes that we have, and quickly talk about our question we had, which is our hashtag sporty question of the show. I asked, the scene in a movie or TV show that makes you cry. This was spurned by my watching of Saving Private Ryan on Wednesday morning, and one of my favorite movies of all time. Every movie, when Private Ryan goes back to the grave of Captain Miller and he asks his family, like, tell me I have led a good life. Tell me I'm a good man. Like, oh my God, that gets me every time. So that's what spurned on my question. We got a lot of replies. Let me read through some of them quickly. Dylan sent us a GIF of what appears to be from The Office, I believe, of Steve Carell. Broadway Boys, the New York Rangers podcast.
Yeah, it's when Steve Carell leaves, because there's two seasons of The Office where he is no longer on The Office because him and Holly have left.
I assume that's what that was from, so I've never seen it, but we'll leave that for another discussion. The Broadway Boys, New York Rangers podcast tweeted us a picture of the scene from Up with during like the funeral scene there. Oh,
oh, absolutely. That's rough.
Hungry for Hawks Talk tweeted when Andy says goodbye to Woody and Buzz during at the end of Toy Story 3. We have Isha saying the movie Radio. We have Chris from the Boston Bruins podcast saying Coco, which I have yet to see, actually.
Neither have I. I need to, though.
Grant, friend of the show, of course, Wolverine's death at the end of Logan. And AJ from Vegas says Toy Story 3 and 4. And we got a lot more, too. So you can go check those out at Corey_Richie Show on Twitter. But I explained my pick. Your pick did not shock me at all, either.
Yeah, so I had two. Well, one for Grant. I was with Grant when he watched that. Biggest, like, Wolverine fan you can meet. And I had to make sure he was okay after that movie. Because I was like, are you sure you're okay? The man's supposed to be mortal and he just died. Yeah, mine was along the same vein, I guess you could say. Mine was the I am Iron Man and then snapping his fingers and then obviously Iron Man dies. That was a lot for me. I was bawling, crying, like, for a long period of time. Yeah, that one was really rough for me. The one that has always made me, from when I was a kid, and I have it as like my secondary one, is when Bruce Willis dies in Armageddon. There's so many other people that could have died, so gone out there, but no, he had to die, had to say bye before she got married to save her fiance. I hate that scene. They couldn't have made that scene more dramatic.
I haven't seen that movie in like over a decade, actually.
Yeah, just watch that scene with Liv Tyler and Bruce Willis, and it will make you like ugly cry.
Is that the song with the is that Aerosmith?
Or is it the everyone Google always Doll brings song? That up, and it's funny. Everyone always brings that up, and it's that. So the I Don't Want to Miss a Thing is actually when Liv Tyler and Ben Affleck are on like a picnic, because Ben Affleck's like her fiance, and they're on a picnic. And he's got little animal crackers and he's like going up like her stomach with like the animal cracker, like having it like climb on her. And they're on a picnic when that song's playing.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I remember liking Armageddon as a kid. I don't remember crying at all during at the time I first saw it, but that's it. I'm trying to think of like what my second pick would be. I'm trying to think of like a movie in recent memory or a TV show in recent memory, and there's nothing that really comes to mind, really. Probably Oliver Queen's death.
Oh,
and they fucking did it to us twice too, those fucking bastards.
Yeah, that was rough.
And on the series finale too, with Oliver and Felicity, and they're like holding hands and like, oh, so cute. And then those are the most recent ones I can think of, at least.
That was probably the hardest part, was actually when they met up at the end. Mm-hmm. Because then she was like, oh, well, if this is your you're making this up in your head or whatever, then why are we here? And he goes, it's where I first saw you. And she goes, no, it wasn't. But it really was, because she was looking at the picture of him in his office, and she goes, oh, you're really cute. Too bad you're dead. And that was when he was like hiding in Queen Consolidated. She didn't know. See, I'm getting like a little bit emotional talking about it. And people are going to think I'm weird because I know the exact bits and pieces of that final scene. But whatever.
I haven't gone back and watched it. I watched the series finale one time, but I couldn't put it through myself to watch it again.
Oh, no, I haven't watched it again. I just remember watching that, and I was, like, sitting there. I'm like, oh, it's when she was in... Because I've watched that first... not that first episode, but, like, that episode from the first season. I've watched that episode multiple times where they show, like, the flashback of her being in... being in, like, his dad's office. and she was like putting like some papers in there, and then she like holds up a picture of like him with his dad, and she's like, "You're really cute. Too bad you're dead." And then sets him back down, and he's hiding, and that's when the first time he sees her. Mm-hmm. So I remember that when I watched it the first time, and it like got ingrained into my soul.
Yeah, it's I want to go back. I will go back and watch Arrow at some point, because I still miss it, because like the CW shows now, like I was watching Superman and Lois, the series premiere of that show. You know, it's very different. It's very different. Because it's not really, at least the first episode wasn't a Superman show.
Hmm.
Wherein Supergirl is very much a Supergirl show, where she's Supergirl quite a bit of the time. And, you know, she has her team of like helping her on her missions or whatever, you know, week to week and taking down villains. Whereas Superman and Lois is more of a family drama.
Is it like Smallville in that way?
Yes. The best way I would describe it for Superman fans is it's got a little bit of the teen drama from the first few seasons of Smallville when Clark is still in high school. And then it's got that part to it, and then it's got a little bit of the original Lois and Clark TV show too, where it's a little bit more of an adult version of it, kind of, where he's more grown up and he's Clark a lot of the time, and it's got that kind of romance type of like that show was. And it's kind of a mix of the two, because in this particular show, a lot of the point of the show is that Superman Clark is now a dad. He's got two teenage sons in this version of the show. And that's kind of the whole point of the show, where it's more of him dealing with how to be a father than it is with him being Superman. And that really intrigued me, because I always think Clark Kent is a more interesting character than Superman himself. So I'm glad they focused on the relationship more in the pilot episode of Clark, of Lois and their two sons, more so than anything else. And it really differentiated itself between the rest of the Arrowverse shows for that, in my opinion. So I'm hoping it sticks to that kind of idea rather than going full like superhero here in the next few episodes.
That's very interesting. I mean, I think what makes Superman so interesting is the fact that he does have a very human side. I mean, technically, if you take him out of Earth and you take him away from a red sun, he really is just a normal person at that point. So I do think it's always really interesting how they explore that. I really loved Smallville, which was part of the reason, like, I initially was going to watch Arrow right when it, like, came out, because of the fact that my dad and I were big Smallville fans, and they made the Green Arrow in Smallville, though, absolutely atrocious. So if you're ever...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I went back and watched an episode of Justin Hartley's Green Arrow on that show. Cheesy as fuck.
Oh, it's obnoxious. I'm like, why do you exist? It's absolutely terrible, completely terrible. So don't ever go back and watch it for Green Arrow, because it's not good. But we were still going to, out of curiosity, watch it, especially because it was a different actor. So we're like, oh, they might actually make it better, and obviously they did. You know, everyone always says that like Arrow's a little bit more Batman-esque. It doesn't. He doesn't get more like comedic, I guess you could say, until like later seasons. But so I was going to watch it directly after because of that. I graduated high school and I forgot about life. So I didn't go back until someone told me I looked like Felicity Smoke, and then I finally watched it. But I was that committed to Smallville at the time. So I'm one of those that has enjoyed the Arrowverse before it was the Arrowverse. So I feel like this show will kind of make it come back full circle for all of the people that were like me, because like obviously I watched it when I was really young, but I'm sure there's plenty of teenagers that watched it when it was like actually out.
Yes, and so far it's been getting pretty good reviews from fans and from critics. The ratings were pretty good for it too, so I'm curious to see how they how the show continues to develop in comparison to the other shows. Quickly, before we go, as we're on the topic, I've been watching season 2 of Batwoman. Brand new Batwoman this year with Ruby Rose departing the role. And they brought
How did they write that in?
Okay, so essentially, Kate Kane goes missing. One of the very first few minutes of the new season, there's a Kate's allegedly coming back from somewhere in a plane, and the plane crashes, and she goes missing, and then it just so happens that the new character who is now in the Batwoman costume, Ryan Wilder, played by Javika Leslie. She's been great so far, by the way. She just happens to be at, like, the crash site and finds the Batwoman costume and, like, decides to be her own, like, vigilante, basically, and then she joins the team. But so far, season 2, I like season 2 a lot better than season 1. Season 1, way too bumpy, way too uneven. The writing wasn't all that great. They didn't really figure out what to do. Season 2, so much better. Javika Leslie is a terrific actress. And she is crushing it. The Ryan character is so much more interesting than the Kate character. And I think the show just works so much better in season 2 than it did in season 1. So I'm curious. Yeah. I know you watch Batwoman off and on in season 1. But I'm curious for you to catch up on season 2 of Batwoman. Let me know what you think. Because I really do think it's a vast improvement from season 1.
I'm trying to remember where I ended off. I do remember I watched the episode where her good sister comes over from here we go, in case you guys didn't care about the Arrowverse, you're gonna hear a little background of it. In the final, like, crossover that they do, all of the multiverses combine into one, and so her sister, who is evil in this earth, there's a good one in another earth, where, you know, she didn't go over the edge in the car crash. They had her in there. I thought they were going to, like, make that an interesting storyline and keep them both alive. I thought we were going to have to bring up another CW show, we're going to have, like, a Catherine and Elena type situation where, like, one was good and one was bad. And I was really enjoying it. And then they just killed her off. I was like, this is dumb. This is actually a very interesting storyline. And you just killed her off, like, within that episode. And I was just, I don't know. I was just kind of irritated with the writing at that point. I think I just stopped.
I don't blame you at all. And that, I agree. I think that was one of the more interesting storylines of the first season. And then the rest of the season just blah. You can take or leave it. And you can probably just pick up with season 2, honestly, and be perfectly fine. But anyway, yeah, it's getting late. It's already 11:30 here. We've been going for 48 minutes already. Do you have anything else before we say goodbye?
I can't think of anything else other than the fact that I'll be gone for next episode. So Richie has obtained a very amazing, I don't know if it's top secret quite yet, so I won't announce it, but has obtained a very great and amazing co-host for me being gone next week. So I hope you guys really enjoy Monday's episode, even though I won't be on it. It'll be pretty cool.
We can say who it is. So with Corey gone for Monday's episode, I'm going to be joined by special guest co-host Jordan Nash Bolden. You've probably seen her on Twitter if you're a Coyotes fan. She used to be the goaltender for ASU women's hockey team. She has since graduated and has gone on to do other things. But I'm going to be talking to her. She's going to be joining me as my co-host for Monday's show. Really looking forward to it. Her and I, big fans of Darcy Kemper, are hashtag Darcy for Vezina. And also, we have started a new thing on Twitter where we are trying to get a Jacob Chychrun for Norris campaign going. And Jordan was genius enough to come up with the hashtag Chick Norris. And so her and I have been making, like, Chick Norris jokes on Twitter over the last few days. genius. Follow Jordan at Joba the Goalie and follow me at O'Flores91. You can go back and look. Great stuff. I'm really excited for her to join the show and become a part of the Sporty Nation. And that'll be coming up Monday as Corey's off. Corey usually doesn't miss any shows. This is the first time Corey's missed a show in a long time. So I'm bummed to be missing out on you, Corey, but I'm excited that Jordan's going to be joining the show.
That is very sweet of you, Richie. I think this may actually be the first one I've missed ever. I can't remember ever missing a show. And I'm going out of town, and so I didn't want to leave Richie hanging. So I was like, you know, it's probably best to make plans without me, so that way, in case something happens when I'm driving back, I didn't want to leave him too out there. But yes, I don't leave the show very often, so it feels weird. It feels like I'm leaving my child, but I know it will be in great hands, and I'm excited to listen to it.
Yeah, that's coming out on Monday. So that's going to do it for this episode. We hope you enjoyed it. We hope you really enjoyed watching the Coyotes pretty much give you heart attacks for 6 straight periods, plus an overtime, plus a shootout. And we hope you enjoy the 2 games coming up on Friday and Saturday against the Colorado Avalanche. Should be interesting games, to say the least. And follow us on Twitter at Corey_Richie Show. Follow Corey at Corey Nicole. Of course, myself at OrFlores91. And we will talk to you again on Monday, Sporty Nation. Good night and good hockey, everybody.